Welcome to 8-10-12. My name is Russell.
My name is Patrick.
And you're very welcome to the first edition of this podcast, which is about the Eurovision Song Contest. Coming up, we'll be talking about what we know so far and what the rumours are saying about this year's contest. We'll be reacting to a couple of the selection shows taking place at the moment and throwing back to Vienna 2015, one of our favourite contests, and analysing what we think about it. This is 8-10-12. Okay, hello Patrick.
Hello Russell.
Hi, we're live.
Chin chin. The first episode of this brand new podcast, all about one of our favourite subjects in the entire world, and one that actually surprises people when we bring it up, because it's not actually in our general realm of things if you were to place us in a box, because we are more exclusively about food and travel. But then of course Eurovision creeps into that because
why not?
Because it's meant to
we
be.
We are
there,
allowed to have a life outside it. So if you are just stumbling across this podcast, which hopefully one or two of you are, hello, you. We are food and travel bloggers, normally known as gastrogays, but for a couple of months of the year, we are Eurovision obsessives. We are muted and blocked and sent to the...
And loved
in some ways, I suppose, throughout this whole time of year, because we are obsessed about Eurovision and we really love it. And we have done so for a few years, and a bit of a backstory. We've gone to now, what, three, four contests?
This is our fourth. Because
yeah,
we did Stockholm in 2016.
Kiev in 2017. Lisbon 2018. And Tel Aviv 2019. Yes. But we've been watching this for years and been obsessing with it. Writing about it, tweeting about it, and everything in between. So why not podcast about it as well?
And I guess through our enjoyment of it over the years, we've kind of become, yes, you could say obsessive, but we say that in the best way possible, because it's obsession bordering on nerdy. So we've kind of become experts in our own way,
yes,
in our own enjoyment of the contest.
And for us, we always say that if we're able to get one or two people who maybe wouldn't watch it, maybe has a bad preconception about the contest, which is very unlikely for you to be listening to this podcast, because I'm assuming you are a super fan-ish yourself, that more than likely, you know, we hope one or two people can really get into this, enjoy the contest for what it is, a one night, well, three
well,
night.
If you're us. Year-long spectacular.
A year-long spectacular, or a one-night great TV show that brings people together and tears us apart by the time the results come out at the end of the programme. Anyway, let's kick off and talk about what we know so far about 2019.
So we know the place it's being hosted.
That's really good, yeah.
That's a great starting point. So
that's
Israel
good.
Will be hosting it.
And
is it their third time or fourth time?
It's confusing because
they've won four times
but haven't always hosted. So it's their third time hosting.
So they hosted it twice in Jerusalem?
Yes.
Yeah.
And then this time it'll be the first in Tel Aviv. So far we know four of the country's entries.
Four of the country's entrance. I think only one song.
One song and four people. So a lot of countries have been doing this thing where they announce the artist, give us a little tease, and then... What's wrong with a little tease? It's Eurovision.
It's so annoying to know the person and then go, oh, well, their style is kind of this, or, okay, they usually do a ballad, and then they could do the complete opposite thing. So I prefer to know the artist and the song immediately, but I guess in this drawn-out kind of pre-season thing, the broadcasters kind of want to tease everybody and have the build-up to the grand final.
It's like we even, for, you know, Cyprus, for example, who came second last year, many will say, including ourselves, that we...
Actually first.
We would have loved it to win, because we're still playing Fuego. It's such a great song.
I think all of Europe is still playing Fuego.
I know. Well, of course, it's a brilliant track. But they've announced the song name, they've announced the artist, and we'll get to that when it comes to the turn of Cyprus and talking about Cyprus anyway. But at the moment, we are currently in the midst of the French selection show, which we'll come on to in just a few moments. Lithuania has also started this selection show, and the Czech Republic has also started the vote, which is available on the app. Have you heard any of the songs?
No, I know that they released all of the artists and...
you can hear the songs.
Yeah, I haven't heard any of the songs
I've heard about two, and let's just say, no, I'm okay. not impressed. Okay. I'm not impressed, but I'm going to try and be fair.
So the Czech Republic has a pretty shaky recent experience of the contest, except for last year where... they were an early favourite.
Yeah, completely.
Until he almost broke his back.
Poor love, I know.
But then he did really, really well. Yeah. So I think, but then in Stockholm, they had, I can't think of her name, but she did the ballad, I Stand.
Yes.
And that moment, it was the moment at the start of the changes of how they were going to give out the votes at the end. And I think it was the first country to get with zero points. Czech Republic. Oh. And you could just feel this across the entire crowd.
Because
and I know everyone across Europe and across the world who was watching was also feeling that as well.
And the funny thing was they were like, yeah, this the great thing about this new point system is it's going to, you know, increase the suspense. Everyone will get points except Czech Republic. And it just felt really cruel. But it's a nice song. Wasn't it? So to be fair, and full disclosure from the outset, we're only kind of looking at the French, Swedish, and British and Australian selection shows this year. Only.
Yeah.
Only four.
I mean, I think that's more than your average person.
And try not to get too swept up into it because, bills to pay. And we also would like to just kind of take a look at some of the things and then judge the song on the one that's actually... going to be performed in May rather than lots of ifs and buts. We may look at Norway or something. Yeah. We may just dip in and out of one or two of them, but they're the main ones that we're going to be focusing on.
I think if you invest in all of the selection processes across Europe, it begins to take away from the actual act who wins because you will have your own personal favourites throughout the whole thing. And if they don't win... you may turn a bit sour and you may get a different kind of experience of the...
If only they sent...
type exactly. of thing. And we are guilty of that ourselves.
Yeah.
And also, there's one more who is in the process at the minute. Spain.
Oh, yeah, Spain.
Spain are close to revealing who the...
yes, because it isn't Spain the really exciting Fame Academy-style program again this year, is
That's
it?
Like 3 months long, right?
Yeah. Yeah. Brilliant. So that's interesting. We'll dip in and out of that as the weeks go on. But let's just talk about France. The first episode of Destination Eurovision was on. It's now currently the 18th of January. It was on last Saturday. Very exciting because it is probably the first of the big selection shows going on. It's the second year that France
the second year, yeah.
had a selection program like this. For the really geeky people, especially if you're British, it's actually produced by ITV.
Oh.
Mm. It's produced because ITV Studios is it's a whole minefield, but basically they actually produce it. So a lot of people who say the BBC shouldn't be hosting it anymore.
Well, anyway, here's your example, because the BBC have been doing it 3 years, 4 years?
Well, as in the BBC have been doing Eurovision since it began.
The selection show.
The selection show idea, yes.
And but, I would wager that the French one is of a higher quality, a greater process, more... just thought put into it.
Yeah, I guess so. I enjoy it. Now, if you haven't watched it yet, it's a really weird format, isn't it? And especially if you don't speak French, yeah. I don't think you'll quite understand what's going on.
I mean, we have this, I guess, understanding of conversational French, but the critiques and the introductions and the stories in it are probably beyond
Patrick,
our
lie.
Reaches of French.
Patrick, don't lie. Last Saturday, we had friends over when we were watching this, okay? And the three of us had no clue of what was being said except for an occasional word or two. And every so often, like the... you know when you're watching something from the EU or the UN and they do the translation? And there you know, oh, c'est bon, and Patrick's like, it's very good. It's a lovely sound to the song. Really great performance. All right, thanks, Patrick. And continue on. You have a better grasp of it than I ever will, so thank you.
But I'm sure that there's aspects of it in the middle that go completely over our heads. But yes, going back to the structure of it, it is a bit odd because each of the entrants in the two heats perform a cover song first to kind of introduce them to the public, which is a bit odd, I think, because why would you have them cover a different artist and then do the song that they're competing to win with. Especially, I guess we're biased, but to an international audience, if it's a particularly French song that they cover, you think, oh my god, yeah, I love this song, I hope they enter this.
And you realise, hang on, that's Edith Piaf.
Or then you go, oh, how come they're doing another song that's not as good? I really don't like this song.
And case in point, this was what happened last weekend.
And last year.
And last year as well, in fairness. So, if you want to catch up on it, you could, copyright reasons, we can't play any of the music on it. I can hum, I can sing, but probably shouldn't. No.
Maybe let's not.
Maybe another glass of that and we'll see how that goes. But let's talk about the ones that got through. Let's talk about actually one that didn't get through, which was a song called In the Shadows.
In the Shadow.
Yeah. In the Shadow. Yeah. Singular
Only
Shadow.
One Shadow.
Okay. Now, this was the second track performed on the night.
By Florina?
Yes. And ever since, we've actually been playing it non-stop. It's a very, very good song. Now, her vocals...
shaky, to say the least.
Yes. And I can't help but think that it does sound like a rip-off of the first couple of bars of Sia's Chandelier, on repeat, reversed, and looped. But it's a very catchy song.
If that entered the Melfest in Sweden, you would think, yeah, pretty standard expected from Sweden. I think it was a really strong entry from France, and probably the way that they need to go. And yes, I think it was an issue of the vocals on the night, and the scoring was pretty harsh.
Yeah, the televote gave 21 points, but the jury gave it zero.
Yeah,
which is quite a shock. Which is the same as Le Petit Nicolas, which was a song which did get through, and that got 21 points, but then got 59 overall, 38 points from the jury. So, you know, it differs. It just depends on what they think, I guess.
I love the Corsican one. I am a sucker for a kind of obscure language, and anything that's a bit
unique,
off the beaten track and unique at Eurovision. And the operatic element of it, I thought, worked really, really well. Now, the performance was very basic, a bit boring, and the vocals, Patrick, again, were shaky.
Patrick. Why was it boring? There was topless, ripped men walking around the stage.
They weren't walking. They were just like kind of doing hand movements to the left-hand side and then to the right-hand side and then to the left and then to the right. And then there's this operatic, shrieking woman on this kind of a pyramid. Yeah. I mean, very Eurovision, but I can understand why the French public may have not given that so much love.
The song that everyone is talking about, and if I will be saying this in every episode of this podcast, YouTube has been talking a lot about in particular, is the song which topped the charts, I suppose, that week with 115 points. It was Bilal Hassani, hopefully I'm pronouncing his name correctly, with the song
Wah.
Not Roy.
or Roy Cropper.
Or in the midst of all this Brexit stuff, I instantly was like, oh, Republic of Ireland is supporting us. No. No, it's called Wah. Now, his cover is Stromae, who we love. We absolutely love his music. And Carmen, which we actually hadn't heard before. Had you?
I knew of the song, but the interpretation and the arrangement of it last week was a bit different, so it completely threw me. But here's again an issue I have with the cover thing. Do not give me that and then don't deliver a performance that's like that.
What do you mean?
Because
as in,
I want...
What did you think of the original performance on the night?
Amazing.
Yeah.
I thought of all of the other covers, it grabbed attention, it was powerful, it was confident. And then the entry, I was kind of let down by. Now, it was the best of the night, so I can see why it soared up the table. But again, it's the issue I have with the covers.
Yeah, it was such a powerful, almost like, I think we were like going, wow, whooping and hollering like crazy when we heard the cover, thinking, I'm excited to hear this. Again, we had no previous knowledge of any of the songs, and same this week, we have no idea what's going on. And when the performance of Wah happened, is my French getting better?
You'll get there.
Okay, thank you. when the performance of that happened, we were like, oh, this is good. Mm-hmm. This is good.
It has promise.
But I've been playing the song all week.
His song?
Yeah. I have not stopped. That's been my most played song this week. I'm obsessed with this song. And it is a hot favourite. It was written by last year's entrance as well. Yeah. Madame Monsieur.
Can't be sniffed at.
So, you know, there is that influence there. There is a very, very good hand being put on this entry. But I have this feeling that if it does get through the whole process of Eurovision, we're going to be overhyped about this. And we're going to be upset that it doesn't do as well when it gets to May. Now, obviously, that's just hypothetical talk. Every other song could be just someone playing turd on a string or something for all we know, but there is that risk. And I hate to say that as a fan, that it's like, okay guys, calm down, but I just fear that already I'm seeing this being overhyped. His performance on Saturday was not mind-blowing. It was good, but the vocals were not as strong as they are on the studio version.
Yeah.
And on the studio version, they're amazing. I really, really like this song. I've been playing it nonstop. Just bring that to the stage, and I have a feeling there's going to be a disconnect. Now, he has 2 weeks to fix it.
And if we know anything from last year in Destination Eurovision, they change up, or they, I guess, evolve the performance and the arrangement a bit for the final. So there is promise. And then if the song wins, there is a long lead-in of changes that can be made and adaptations.
Exactly. This isn't the final performance at the end of the day. So, you know, I think that always has to be played into people's minds as well. What you see isn't going to be perfect. There's time to work on this. We have until May. So, who knows? There is the guts of a really great entry there, though.
Yeah.
But there does need to be a fair bit of work going on with it. Let us know your thoughts anyway. We have a hashtag. A hashtag!
Does anybody use those anymore these days?
I don't know. So we're using hashtag 81012pod. So that's the numbers 8, 10 and 12.
And then pod
at the end, because it's short for podcast. And if you have any thoughts on it, please just get in touch and we will chat online about that, or ignore you if you're abusive. Who knows? We'll see.
This isn't YouTube.
Okay. It isn't, no. So, we're going to throw back away from 2019 and start talking about the old days, the good old days. Oh, remember the old days.
Not that old, though.
Not that old. Every other episode, we're going to be talking about a previous contest that we really, really enjoy, that we think, let's just reminisce about and talk about the favourite things about it, what we've enjoyed, and so on and so forth.
How can you talk about the thing in the present day if you can't go back to how it started or the years that preceded the current year?
Can I get an amen?
Can I get an amen? Thank you very much.
Thank you, Rue.
Yes.
So, Vienna, 2015. Yes. You loved this year.
I loved the operatic thing and the orchestral vibe, and I think Austria was a great host, and the story of them being so long awaiting a coveted second win, I mean, it was bound to be amazing.
It did take a while.
It did take a long time.
No, I mean the actual opening.
Oh, yeah. And then the rest of it afterwards, too.
That had to be one of the long... Now, it was one of the longest contests.
The longest on record,
if I remember correct. Yes.
Yes.
It did go on. And that, as a viewer, was not great. And only kind of rewatching it. Now, full disclosure, guys, I don't know if you can tell by the accents. We're not quite 33 yet, but we're Irish. And if you can recall what happened the day of Vienna 2015, it was the result of the marriage equality vote. And we're gay. So, you know, we were kind of very happy about it. So there's a couple of gaps in the memory of watching it originally, let's just say, and in the reviewing it of over the last couple of years, those gaps have been well filled, and we now understand exactly what went on. Yeah. But as a viewer, that went on way too long.
I mean, that opening, from the video introduction to the crowd, to Conchita, to the orchestra, I mean, it must have been an hour.
It felt like it. I think it was 25 minutes before we even had an entry on stage, which is far too long, in my opinion. You know, you've had two semifinals during the week. let's have a really quick but exciting opening, a flag ceremony. Obviously, you had to do the walking through the crowd with all the names. The thing that really got me going and annoyed was the fact that they had all the entrants in the green room, and then they had to walk back to the stage and then stand on the stage and then leave the stage, when it would have made so much more sense to have them walk onto the stage and through the crowd into the green room. But anyway,
but
logistics.
After their performance, they only go to the green room. So they weren't going back to the green room. They were probably all going to the backstage at that point.
True, but...
But yeah, I mean, darling. Did we not need to have that? I mean, it just took so long.
On the positives, I don't think, Katie Boyle or anyone like that ever flew in on a zip wire during Eurovision.
I wish that she would.
Fionnuala Sweeney never did either. I just wish Mary Kennedy might have.
Well, her giant staircase, I mean...
I know.
Can't really be topped.
I know, really can't. But Conchita can't be topped.
A great opener.
Yeah.
A brilliant, brilliant
opener.
Oh,
it was just
and
amazing.
Then, yeah.
Flying.
And, yeah. And then to have her in the green room and... You know, controversial opinion alert. Mm-mm. Is there a klaxon that you can play?
If anyone wants to imagine the sound of an alarm going off.
Or
now,
a foghorn.
Well, we're right beside a main road, and every so often you'll hear a car going by, so you might get a siren.
Yes. Well, controversial opinion alert. I think to be in the green room as the host, you need a command of English. Now, I would be the first person to argue that the broken English can be funny sometimes, but it can be tedious as well. Mm-hmm. So it was really refreshing to have a green room host who had a crystal clear command of the English language. I think that really helped. But I also thought that Conchita kind of held back in the green room a bit. We didn't really get the personality of her either, which I think everybody expected, because her performance the previous year and her whole persona is a spectacle.
Though she had some great one-liners throughout the whole thing, which was great. And actually, as a foursome, they were a really good bunch of hosts, actually.
Really
and
good, yeah.
I still sing, "If only for tonight we're building bridges," because it was a lovely song. It was lovely. It was when it eventually got played 25 minutes into the show.
I keep changing the lyrics to "Burning Bridges."
Why?
It just sounds better off the tongue.
Really?
Oh, we're burning bridges.
You are such an arsonist sometimes.
I mean, yeah.
Anyway, sure that was... Anyway, other things that were important to note about this contest. It was the introduction of Australia.
Woohoo!
With Guy Sebastian, which I still say every time I hear it, I think it sounds like an ad for KFC.
Or other chicken shops.
I can't think of any other chicken shops. Anyway, I still think of that, which was a really exciting thing. Australia have added something new to the contest. I'm sick to death of people asking, "Why is Australia in the Eurovision?" But I think they bring something new to the table. They bring a different vibe, a different energy, and it's something new. And until we start getting new countries being allowed in, and by goodness, there seems to be a lot of difficulty with a lot of countries getting into the contest. We're talking about Kazakhstan, we're talking about Kosovo, who've not had a chance to be in Eurovision yet. You know, in the main Eurovision at least, it's nice to have a new country coming in. It makes it a little bit more exciting.
Though people are still, you know, 4 or 5 years in, still this kind of argument of, okay, so why are Australia in the Eurovision Song Contest? And you're just kind of thinking, get over it, get used to it. If they still keep coming every year and keep competing at the level that they're competing at, the past year or two, questionable, but you know, they are bringing it every year, and so that is to be welcomed.
You sound like an Irish person in the 90s. Do you know that?
About the Eastern Bloc?
No, about constantly winning. You know, well, if we're just bringing it every year and we're just doing great, why not?
Cut to 20 years of barely being in the final, but that's besides the point.
And this, for us, was a year that we weren't in the final. Mm. Molly Sterling, beautiful song.
Yeah.
Playing with Numbers. Maybe. I was going to say painting, but it's Playing with Numbers. A beautiful song. I don't think it deserved to be knocked out. of the entries that were knocked out over mm-hmm. the years, I don't think that one was one that deserved it.
The last time we had a female represent us as well. It's been
yes.
three males.
Yes, and if the rumours are to be believed, we could be, hopefully, mumbering our way to Healy style. I don't know. I'm just saying what the internet is telling us, unless it's Niall Horan, but that's already been denied strongly. That might come back to haunt you, so I may edit that out. I'll see.
Well,
yeah, I'll see.
And it was also a spectacle of a year in Austria, because the hosting country and the previous winner came last.
And that was the first. No?
I don't think that was the first.
I think it was the first.
The Netherlands bombed once. Didn't Corrie Brocken win and then come last the next year, because she was the only person at that time who had defended her title? And I'm pretty sure that she came last, or she might have entered it a couple of years later and came last. Either way,
it's a lovely train of thought, but
This is just a stream of consciousness podcast now. You're just here having to listen to these thoughts, trying to make sense in my mind.
But it was disastrous. It hasn't happened.
Yeah.
And it was like shocking to see the host country last.
I think
last.
They had a laugh at it, though. Yeah. I think, as far as I remember, the Make Makes posted an Instagram clip yeah. afterwards that said, "Ooh, we are the zeros." Because
yes. Yes.
they came last. So, yeah. I mean...
And they are forever in Eurovision history, because the following year, they got part of Love, Love, Peace, Peace.
Of course they did.
And a burning grand piano, and that was them.
Yeah.
And a lot of people were like, "Oh, I don't ever remember seeing a burning grand piano." And it's like, yeah.
Cast your minds back. And
a year.
Therefore, it's in the rule book for how to win Eurovision. So it will go down in history.
Exactly.
So we applaud their efforts,
if you
even
ever,
if they came last.
Exactly. Now, if you ever do want to watch old Eurovision song contests, more recent ones tend to be on YouTube quite freely without commentary. And if you go back a little bit to years kind of early 2000s, 90s, 80s, they are available if you search very, very hard, but they are available to watch. And it is a nice way to spend a Saturday night or Sunday night, because it is nice to watch old contests. And you see it in a different light. And we always say this, the amount of songs that we hated during the song contest that we've ended up loving now in our current state of mind. It's very weird.
Yeah.
It's just the way it is. And at the end of the day, it is a bit of fun. It is only a song.
And you'll be
sorry, I burped. It is only a song contest.
Ignore that. Edit that out. And you will find that when you go back through the annals of time, it's surprising how often the points in previous incarnations of how they do the points, how close it was at the even all of the way throughout, and then to the last country, to the last 12 points. Which is exciting in its own right as well. So I think it's really worth re-exploring.
It is. All of the old and then contests. You see those moments such as Bruce Forsyth giving out about Switzerland because his daughter wrote the song. Did you ever see that interview with him? No?
Yeah.
Did I show you it?
Yeah, where but it isn't broadcast as part of the
No, it should
the contest.
Be, though. It's a great clip. They just cut to Bruce Forsyth in the audience with, if I remember his name, is Jim Moyer, who's the head of BBC Entertainment or something that. And it's two of them just talking to the audience. And the whole thing with the British entry that year was Bruce Forsyth's daughter wrote it. And he did an interview a couple of years later.
A tedious link, right? With,
I love a tedious link, mate. And a couple of years later, he did an interview with Celine Dion, and he just badgered on about the fact that it's like, oh, my daughter. It's very funny. You were like, bitter. But I
so thought, bitter, so bitter.
So, before we go, one more... Well, I say before we go, another 10 minutes or so. Let's talk about countries to watch this year.
Okay.
Let's talk about that. So... Always with Eurovision, it's always a thing of the longest waiting in the wings for a win. And there's three countries in particular, because Portugal's had their win and they're happy and they probably will wait a while before the next win. I don't know. Salvador was not our favourite.
He was the pride of Portugal, though.
He was the pride of Portugal. A deserved win, but not a popular win, let's just say.
In terms of... the Eurovision fans, but I think for Portugal that was a really proud
oh
winner completely. Of all of the entrants that they've had over the years. I think he's definitely up there with who they would want to clinch that first win. But Iceland, Malta...
And Cyprus.
All have still never had their first win.
Cyprus was very, very close last year, obviously coming second.
But we could almost taste it.
Yeah, the fire, the embers are burning in our mouths. It was very exciting, yeah. But it wasn't to be, and who knows, maybe with a song called Replay. See what they're doing there? Maybe we'll have a... It's completely intentional.
I didn't even notice that until you just said that.
Do you not? Yeah. Clever. Replay. Oh, that was great last year. Let's do it again. Who knows? We'll see.
And win. But then there's questions over the capacity of these three island nations.
Oh God, they're all islands.
To actually host it, because Israel is a smaller contest this year, and you know, you have to ease the Eurovision fandom into this idea that, yes, it's become more and more of a spectacle over the years and over the decades, but we need to prepare ourselves for when a smaller country or an island nation cannot host it on that scale. It will be way smaller. It will be more in their style of things. So,
and I think that has to be just accepted because you know, you just have to say a greater bunch of people will have to turn around and go, well, I can't go this year.
Imagine the postcards if Iceland hosts.
See, this is the thing. So let's move on to Iceland. So we talked about Cyprus. Done. Yeah. Iceland, on the other hand, have a bit of a checkered record. They have not qualified since 2014. With no prejudice.
For the most part, has been a travesty.
Yeah, like, hello, Unbroken. Well, vocals on Unbroken were not great.
Shoddy.
Hear Them Calling. Absolutely robbed. And then I will. That will be on my gravestone.
I know that. And that's probably an entire episode in itself. To be followed by Paper, which then didn't qualify.
And then...
Oh, the guy last
year. He was so sweet, though. But it was not a great song to begin with. So, the poor thing. No.
Thanks for trying, hon.
Thank you. No. Thank you, next. Anyway, look at me. I did a queer reference. Aren't I so much fun?
And it's of chart music. Wow. Unlike you.
So it has been a while since they've gotten into the final. And there's something about Iceland. I think we hear them calling. There was something about that song that would have been an amazing winner, especially because of the whole coming home thing. And Iceland, if you've ever visited, is a very weird country in the most
best amazing possible sense.
Way. Every so often you walk around going, I'm on an island in the North Atlantic. This is crazy. And there's a very different mentality about nature, about life in general, that is so beautiful. And I think a contest there would be such a great cultural learning experience, I think, for people watching it. It wouldn't just be about the music, it would be about Iceland as a whole. And so for me and you in particular, I think we really are willing them on just for that. The postcards would be stunning.
Probably the nicest ever.
Yeah, like, could you imagine Corolla on Gullfoss or something like that? Or, you know...
Wrong country.
No.
Who is their equivalent?
No, because Corolla will one day re-represent Sweden.
Okay.
Your
pipe dreams.
You haven't let me get to my second list of Gioia Sequente. Okay, you're back in the 90s, Russell.
Back to the present day.
Okay, sorry. But, you know, that kind of idea, it would be beautiful. It'd be like Ireland if we ever host again. It'd be beautiful.
I think the thing about Iceland is the thing that's about this contest in general, especially over the past few years. It's the luck of the draw. It's chance. You can have an under-the-radar, slow song like Portugal that receives the highest points at that time ever. Then the next year, you have an electronic-influenced, high-energy craziness from Israel that wins...
It can be anything.
After all of the hype. I mean, it really is an ensemble, and it's how each song performs in the cast of the songs that are of that year. Exactly. So I think Iceland have as much of a chance any year as the next year. It's just a case of trying and trying and trying.
And in fairness, they don't have the worst track record of, like, them all, to be honest with you. We have 2 second places.
Yes.
Which is quite close. All Out of Luck in 1999 with the iconic Selma. And Is It True in 2009?
Joanna.
Yes. So, you know, all is not lost. It is possible, but we shall see. Malta, on the other hand, the other island.
Yes.
The other Tyra.
Has also come close a few times.
Haven't qualified for 2 years since Walk on Water with Ira Losko.
Still prefer Chameleon.
I still prefer Chameleon, I'm sorry. And if you agree with us, hashtag 81012pod if you agree. Tweet anything you like into the ether if you don't agree. But I really, really liked that song, and it was a travesty that it was changed. But Walk on Water did very well. It did come 12th. But there's been quite a few hit and misses, failed to qualify a couple of years. Warrior, obviously, which came one place ahead of Molly for Ireland in that qualifier.
The Kiaras of this world.
The Kiara, well, but similar to Iceland, there's those iconic artists, iconic songs that everyone remembers. Like, you know, go back to Iceland, you got Je Ne Sais Quoi. Banger.
Schlager diva incarnate.
Absolute. And then you have, well, for me, you have On Again, Off Again.
The biggest travesty to ever hit the Eurovision stage.
Here's a fact for you, though. In 2004, On Again, Off Again came 12th, and Ira Losko in 2016 came 12th. So they're equal.
Smaller pool back then, mind.
Well, they did have a semi-final. But anyway, so anyway, that's that. So Malta, interesting one. Their selection show is actually currently going on right now because it's actually part of the X Factor.
The X Factor,
Imagine that in Britain.
Yeah, I think the X Factor has peaked very many years ago in the UK, and in Malta, in a smaller country, they could have more, I don't know.
Well, it's, I suppose, a different talent. In Britain, in particular, that show has just become some sort of beast.
And it's a formula, it's not a pretty beast. Every year, and it's TV over music, so.
Oh, completely.
And then we've already, I guess, kind of talked about Cyprus. I mean, they came amazingly close last year. So, you know, if they keep doing that, chances are they will win.
So they are really kind of three to watch out for this year. None have the entrance out yet. We obviously have the name of Cyprus's artist and the name of the song, but we don't have the song just yet. So keep an eye for them as the weeks roll on toward May in particular, because it will be interesting to see. I think we've, especially since Portugal, we've all become a bit more. So who's next in line for the longest wait for a win? So
Ireland.
That will be next week's edition.
So as we already mentioned, our accents are Irish. So naturally we have a bias towards our home country, who is, plug, the most decorated country in the contest history. Represent.
Thank you for
and
that message.
We need another win because Sweden are hot on our tails.
And that's the interesting thing. And again, they'll be another one to watch in a couple of weeks.
Big. Irish eyes are zoned in on Sweden.
So as the weeks come along, you know, we've about 3 weeks or so to go until one of the big weekends, kind of a Super Saturday, I suppose. But it's not official Super Saturday because
in the Eurovision world, it is.
Every Saturday is a Super Saturday.
No, it's not.
Super Saturday seems to be the 2nd of March. When there's quite a lot of finals and a lot of selections.
It's a combination.
But there's a smaller one coming in February.
Oh my God.
When we have...
The more the merrier.
We have the Malmö selection.
Oh, we'll be there.
Of Melfest, which will be there. That's why I remember. Because everything's kind of based around that week. But we also have the Australia Decides, which is the first year that Australia is doing a selection process, which is very exciting. And the artist names and songs have been released.
All
and they all... actually, go and listen to them now. That's what we're going to do after this podcast because we didn't want to overload it with information.
And then it's we all also in the one night, right?
Two nights.
It's over two
or
nights.
Or two okay. mornings for yes. us. But it's on the same weekend as that, and it's also on the same weekend as the British selection.
Wow.
So if you're listening to this as good as the date that we're recording around the 18th of January, Wednesday morning on BBC Radio 2, the songs have been released. And we'll talk about this, I'm sure, close to the time, about the format of how they're doing.
It's different this year.
Yes.
So that could be a good thing. It could be a stumbling block.
Do you know what?
We'll
test it out. You only get yeah. one shot. Exactly. So make it, girl. You might never see. This is my second JLS oh reference God. This evening.
On that note, I think this needs to end right anyway, now.
If you've enjoyed if you've been stuck along for this long, thank you for listening. Thank you for listening to the first edition of 8, 10, 12, a podcast about the Eurovision Song Contest. If you want to tweet us about anything at all or get in touch, just tweet hashtag 8101012pod.
And for us and for more content from us, you can find us on all social media platforms as at GastroGaze, and our website is gastrogaze.com.
And if you've enjoyed it, to keep up with everything we do, subscribe, rate, and the likes,
share
if you wish. But thank you so much for listening to our points of view on the Eurovision